Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is your captain. We're looking at about a four-hour flight time today. We've got clear skies, good visibility. Flight attendants, please prepare for takeoff.
Afternoons on the Horn with Chad Hastings and Kevin Dunn.
You guys both look like you might want to hit me in the face.
On the Horn, 104.9 AM 1260 and hornfm.com with the Longhorns Play and Austin Talks Sports.
Afternoon delight.
Let's go hour number one for the week. Hour number one on a Monday. Kevin Dunn is here. I'm Chad Hastings. Trey Elling producing, keeping everything running smoothly. Our man Devin is in, a new intern. Trey, what's my man's name out here? I can't remember it yet.
Steven.
Steven, thank you.
I was going to go James.
Such a normal name. Those normal names get me. Steven, I apologize. Devin and Steven hanging out with us today. Some new interns getting... getting all learned up under the expert tutelage of Trey Elling.
It's going to be a much better week for them.
For the interns?
Yeah. Because it'll be a better week here.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true. A few more smiles, and a little bit more happy times. How was your weekend?
It was good. It was really good. Had a fun time, and the weather didn't bother me too much because I wasn't tailgating, so hopefully that didn't affect too many of you guys out there, but had a great time, and really helps when Texas plays like that.
Man, the rain has really been nice to Texas 2 weeks in a row.
It has, yeah.
It was supposed to hit and hit hard, and then it just stays away. I don't think maybe a couple drops fell while the pregame stuff was going on, but during the game now 2 weeks in a row, it's nothing. It's
nothing.
Just really nice.
Yeah, so. And yeah, it's also helped out with the game, not so much Tulsa, but we were worried about rain during that game. But, yeah, the weather's been great, and the atmosphere was really good. 103,000, record setting.
I'll say it's the biggest crowd ever, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, 103, 104? Was it 103? 103,500. 103,500, okay. Yeah, that was big. And if you were a part of the crowd, you can let us know what you thought. We'll be breaking that down a lot today. 37-14 was the final. And the Specs text line is 337-3776. Definitely a lot of football to get to for the weekend. Before we do anything else, I want to send out a special shout-out and a thank you to Mr. Ramirez, who works over at the Texas School for the Blind and Visually Impaired.
Yeah.
He made all of us hats months ago, and apparently he had set it in his mind that he was going to make my kid a hat. So today...
I
opened up the Monkey Hastings cap. I tweeted this out, a picture of it, at CHastings1049, and his students did an amazing job with a little monkey logo.
They did a really good job.
And our last name. So I know she's going to love it, and thank you again, Mr. Ramirez. And I believe he said Jared and Paige were the two students that made this hat. So thank you guys so much for listening to the show and enjoying it and being that nice to us, because you obviously don't have to do that.
I always drive by there and I give them a wave. It's like, what's up, y'all? They made us hats that were really cool. The Cabin Dune hat.
Right, yeah. Is that still 45th and Guad around that area?
Basically.
So kind of in that?
Closer to Lamar.
Closer to Lamar.
Yeah, in between Lamar and Burnett.
Gotcha. On in that 45th.
Burn it, learn it.
Yes. So thanks to Mr. Ramirez and his great students. Hope they're having a great Monday, and hope you all are having one as well. If you are the fan of the two big circuses that we cover, you had a pretty good weekend. If you're a Longhorn fan, obviously you got 37-14 over USC. And if you are a Cowboys fan, you got a win over the Giants. Both kind of got the same thing, Kevin. They got a win over a brand name team that might not quite be living up to the brand at this moment.
Yeah.
But.
And we'll help you out.
Yes, and we'll help you out.
There was some help given.
My stupid football thought of the day is the game's a whole lot easier if the team you're playing is kookier than you are.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a little easier to get through sometimes.
Oh, Eli still has happy feet.
Oh, my God. You would, too.
I would, too.
If that's who was blocking for you.
38. He knows what's coming.
You know when it's also easy,
Kevin?
But
I thought it was going to be rebuilt, Chad.
Kevin, it's easy to play defense when they don't block you. That's what I learned in that game.
Yeah.
If they don't block you, man, you can look good. Taco Charlton looked like a Pro Bowler in that game.
Yeah.
Because they just flat out didn't touch
you. You had a couple guys. What, do you have six sacks?
It was six, yeah. And the Cowboys didn't give up one. So they
right. They protected.
They had a great night. But obviously we'll focus a lot on Texas and USC. 37-14. Longhorns, once again, that magic number continues to exist for Tom Herman. Run 40 or more times and you win.
Is that what you guys are getting on this today?
Well, it's one part of it.
Okay.
But if as a head coach, he is undefeated when his team rushes for 40 rushes or more. Take everything else, you know, whatever you want.
Right.
48 carries for 160.
Whoever runs more in the Florida State game will win. And you're right. I mean, usually it played out that way.
Yeah.
Didn't feel like it was the important thing, but the stats would tell you it was.
And by the time that third and fourth quarter were going on and Daniel Young is pounding on him up the middle, it mattered a lot because that USC defense was, I'm not going to say exhausted. That's not the right word. It wore on them, though. You could feel it.
That's exactly what I use, I think, Saturday night. It wore on them, and it was nice. We don't say this a lot. Our offensive line played better.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
and everyone saw it. And it's like, yeah, they played better. There were some mental mistakes, but they did wear on him. And I thought the defensive line kind of did the same thing to the USC offensive line. Charles Minihue has two tackles. Charles played really well. And the defensive line, I thought, played really well. After the first quarter, when the adjustments were made, USC wasn't going to do anything.
How about the play where Minihue goes in there, dude is blocking him, and he, with one arm, reaches out, knocks that ball out, almost created a fumble. Well, he did create a fumble, but he almost creates a turnover there as well.
Right, but it was fourth down, so it didn't matter.
That was a big-time moment.
Yeah, a good moment, but also, I mean, that's the obvious thing to look at, and that was a good play, and I was glad he was able to get that, but thought he played well. Gary Johnson played really well.
Dude, Gary Johnson.
Anthony Wheeler played well.
Gary flashed all night. 33 was all over that field.
And with Malcolm Roach out now for 6 to 8 weeks, it's even more important those guys really take their game to the next level.
Yeah, if you're just jumping in, that's your bad news as a Texas fan today. Malcolm Roach broke his foot in the game, and he's out 6 to 8 weeks. That is the biggest part of the injury situation. Keontae Ingram, questionable, so maybe upgraded from where he was. That might be some good news. Brennan Eagle, still doubtful. Shackelford, still doubtful. Overshone, still out. And, Roach is the big news there, out 6 to 8 weeks. McCulloch looked good.
Yeah, he did.
Played really well. That defense was, they were all over the field. Obviously, at 14-3, they had given up, two of the first three drives, they give up touchdowns. But they adjusted after that. Tom Herman talked about it in his press conference today. That was a good, you obviously don't want to start that way. But their response there to shut out USC, for whatever they're not, USC can score if you give them the right situation. To go the rest of the game without letting them score, that was big.
Well, what they showed, JT Daniels was pretty confident, and after that first drive, he looked confident. And we said if they're able to play pitch and catch, then Texas is in trouble, and it was up to those guys. We'll give Chris Boyd a lot of love. Chris Boyd played like all Big 12.
Yep.
Maybe, better than that type corner. He played really well, and it allowed other guys to come in and play. Caden Stearns continues to flash, and his impact is felt. B.J. Foster is going to have to sit out the first game of next week, but I like the physicality he brings. He's got to tone it down for 2018 and learn how to do it, but he's going to be a hell of a player here.
Yeah, Boyd was really liked the game. That's a great interception. That's a tough pick to make, right? Mm-hmm. Right there on the sideline.
That wouldn't have been my favorite play. My favorite play was down the left sideline where he realized he's doing a better job of he's getting quicker at recognizing I got to get my head turned and this thing's coming. And I don't know if he's reading the receiver's eyes or if he's reading body language, but it's going down the left sideline first half and it's a deep ball and he just cut him off.
Oh, the box out.
You just angled them off. Yeah. I mean, and that's how you can do that in basketball and football. And look, you want to shove me, that's on you. I have every right to this area. Yeah. And if I want to slow my pace a little bit here and you're on my back, that's the way it's going to work.
As I watched that play, and we don't see that play a lot.
That showed some awareness that I really liked.
That was good football IQ.
That was my favorite play he made.
That was a great play.
Was great.
It's kind of the opposite of, we always talk about, if you're the receiver and you're behind the defender and the ball is underthrown, you're supposed to go back through the defender. But in that case, the receiver has to understand there that if he goes out of his way to go get that ball that's overthrown, you could get an offensive PI there.
Right. At that point, you're screwed.
Yeah.
That thing was lost when he was right with you. And even if you were even, you apparently weren't leaving.
He was leaving there, yeah. That was a good play. You're right. Chris Boyd with a good night. Let us know what you thought about the game. Longhorns get the win. Sam Ellinger goes 223 and two touchdowns. He also has a touchdown on the ground. 17 carries for 35 yards. What'd you think of Sam as a runner?
I liked it a lot, and I think there were some design runs, some huge, a fourth down and two where you run that option. And Kyle Porter's in the game for a reason there. Great cut block by
good
him
block.
That
yep.
set the edge. You saw one go the other way, I believe, on a third and two, the last touchdown. Yeah, I liked it. And I also liked the fact I felt like he was a little bit more himself and not as hesitant whenever he was back in the pocket. And if he saw a seam, take off. And a couple times he saw a seam and only got a couple. And you go, well, maybe you should stay in the pocket. I like Sam being able to do that. I think even on a play like that, he may only get three. It lets all those linebackers and safeties know, especially the linebackers that are dropping, you know, he may just come.
Yeah.
And he may just take off. And that's always in your head.
And I would also assume that the first time you try to tackle Sam Ellinger, you also learn how big Sam Ellinger is.
Yeah, he's a big physical guy.
Right? I mean, you learn the physicality of what it's like to try to tackle him. If you have any thoughts, of course, the Specs text line is 337-3776.
Here's my favorite thing about the game is that it just had that feeling. And we're at the point as Texas fans where you're waiting for it to go bad. And when this thing, it was about to be iced. About to make it 30-14, and everything they had done that drive was what we had talked about. You go pick on the other corner. You think that was in the game plan, Chad, from day one?
I think so.
You think moving guys around and throwing their type of route, whether it's a go route with Hurd or one of the guys against that other corner, or whether it's the carry cash jump ball, alley-oop Roderick Anderson to Albert Burdett style, that they were doing against that other corner with a guy like Colin Johnson. I mean, he just took it from him on that one. And then you throw it up there, you go after him again, which you should have. I would have gone probably again, and I think they were going to if Daniel Young hadn't fumbled the football. But he had it. He had it three or four times. Colin Johnson, the one where he had it. Langley did a good job knocking it out.
Zone, yeah.
But then as he's going, he's got it. And then it bounces off his chest, and he's got it. And it's still, and he just couldn't get it. And next play, Danny Young fumbles, deep shot down the field. And I'm thinking, this is 30-14. We just can't get any separation, can we? And the defense played their butts off. And you see Todd Orlando, I'll give Mark Pena credit because he put it on Twitter, that you see Todd Orlando on that 4th-and-12 at that point where they're coming out to attempt the 50-yard field goal, screaming, let's block this MF-er. And so they had something where I think they had a pretty good feel that we can, there may be a weakness on that side. We can get in there and get our hands on it. And like that, it turned. I mean, those are the type of four or five plays that wouldn't have gone that way the last couple of years. A lot of that has to do with USC not being great, and we can definitely get into that. I'm not saying Texas is back at all, but that's the type of growth that as a fan you see, okay, wow, I was worried that I'm glad we were able to win this thing and win it with separation.
The response there kind of reminded you of the response at 14-3. Don't go away.
Right.
Just because things go wrong doesn't mean you can't turn them around. I thought they did just a lot of little things. The little things that didn't go right in the Tulsa game seemed to go right in this game. They made things happen for themselves. Yeah, that was a great that move by Stearns. He made that look simple.
Yeah.
He made it look like, oh, that's how you block a field goal.
Hopped over him.
Wow. That was impressive. And then obviously Wheeler being there when he needed to be was great. And from that point, I heard you say this on the postgame show, from that point on, Texas fans got to finally watch football exhaling. Right? From that moment to the end.
And it wasn't lost on me. The first snap they took, up 30-14. And once it got in the fourth quarter, I thought, this is the first time all year we've taken one offensive snap that is not fight or flight.
You get to breathe. You get to breathe a little bit. I thought, going back and rewatching, and I rewatched that game and I've rewatched TCU and Ohio State. Obviously, we'll get into TCU as the week develops. But in the end, I think one of the most important plays for Texas happened when it was 14-3. because the crowd had a little uneasy feel to it. And why not? Two out of the first three drives go touchdown. They're third and 10. Sam rolls out to his right and hits little Jordan Humphrey for a first down. If they don't convert that play, they're down 11 and they're punting it back and the crowd's in a whole nother mood. But that drive ends with a little Jordan Humphrey touchdown. Now it's 14-10 and you take a little bit of an exhale. Then Boyd gets the pick. You go kick a field goal when it's 14-13. Okay, now you're in a ball game. Here we go. But that third and 10 was a huge play for Sam. Rolling to his right, a little more, obviously more comfortable than the rolling left, which we'll talk about, I guess, this week. I'm not sure why they roll him to the left so much. But
he talked about it a lot last week.
Yeah.
And the week before.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's still a strange issue there. But a good ball to little Jordan Humphrey there in the second half, just like last week. There was a third and 8. Where little Jordan Humphrey ran just beyond the marker. Last week he dropped it. This week he caught it. And just little
too many drops, though. That is something
stuff.
That they still need to clean up.
Yes. Now, in the same sequence, the next play was a first and 10, and he dropped it. I'd rather him drop that one than
Colin
drop
Johnson
it.
Had a big drop on a third down. You got to catch that ball.
Right. They got to make plays. But so far, 84 has shown he's going to drop a couple here and there. But he did make a couple big catches that helped him out, obviously, on Saturday.
The route concepts were much better. We saw more. I still don't think they're hitting the middle enough. But we saw drag routes. And we saw these guys being put in good situations, Sam included. But especially the receivers. And I'll give the receivers some love. I thought they stepped up. They blocked a lot better. It didn't remind me of a 93 Nebraska receiver crew blocking. But it was a lot better, and it was able to open some things up, including little Jordan Humphrey when it is 14-3 and you're trying to get some momentum. And that touchdown, a little out route, Sam puts it there, and that's, once again, picking on personnel. That's a slot corner. It's obvious USC is not right now. They've got a lot of young corners. I'm sure they're talented guys, but they're not ready to go right now.
Yeah, his plan to tackle little Jordan Humphrey was subpar. That was a terrible, terrible way to tackle him. That was a great job of getting away and then turning it not only into a big play, but turning that into a score was huge.
Quick out, and then he turns, and all of a sudden you're trying to tackle 6'4". Rod says 240, maybe 230, 235,
right.
Who's quick.
Yeah, and then nobody was there to help him.
I mean, right. Yeah, because they spread it out, and Sam read that.
That was good stuff. I thought of you on, there was an early, was it Colin Johnson on that very, very first drag route where they brought him all the way across the, I thought of you.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's what Kevin's been wanting, is those drag routes, slant routes, use the middle of the field.
And they ran back-to-back slant routes, and they did it in the second half, and I was just loving it, including one, it was second and 12, and they get a 5 or 6 yard one, I think, to Colin Johnson. Go right back to it with Beck, in who split out, which I know a lot of us don't love, but I'll give him credit. He ran a good slant route, mm-hmm. and Sam put it there, and he was able to.
That was for a first down, I think.
To
right?
get the first down, yeah. And that was 3rd and 7, 3rd and 8, and it was just a couple quick slant routes.
The middle of the field. It is. It can be a productive place. Texas wins 37-14. It also hit me over the weekend. We are one quarter of the way done with the college football season.
You're that family member who's already talking about how bad it's going to be for the vacation to be over with as we're driving down there.
I'm just trying to save her. I'm trying to get everybody to save her.
All right.
Because we're going to.
I'm savoring. Don't worry.
One quarter in, 2-1 for the Longhorns. Obviously, if they can do that 3 more times, they'll be 8-4. And if you're a little better than that, you're a little better than 8-4. But this next quarter is going to be the toughest one. We know that. We've seen it coming. It's TCU, Kansas State, and Oklahoma. But nice win for the Longhorns. We'll see how much they can build on it as conference play starts this Saturday at 3:30. We also have a kick time for Kansas State in Manhattan. That's a 2:30 kick. So your next two weekends are basically the same kick time.
Okay. Well, this is a big one coming up. It doesn't get any easier. I watched TCU Ohio State, but was also watching Texas, and I haven't really gone back and taken another look at TCU Ohio State. I'm probably going to do that tonight. And they look good, though. Ohio State's just so damn good.
They really are.
I mean, that is a loaded team right there. I mean, you've got a quarterback like Haskins. Haskins is the real thing. His accuracy, this guy is, we saw it a little bit last year, but this guy really is an accurate passer and a confident passer right now. And TCU did some good things. I knew they were going to bring some pressure, and early on they got to him a little bit. Darius Anderson's going to be a B. That guy's apparently 4-3, looked like it on the 93-yarder, the longest play Ohio State's ever given up, ever.
Yeah, ever.
Run or pass.
Ever, ever.
Yeah. And it's we're going to have to be on our game, and I hope Texas is ready to go. But they also are going to need an atmosphere like that.
Yep, that would help. That would definitely help. And, I've heard a lot of great things about it, and we'll talk to Trey about it as the show goes on. Trey was in the stands for the game, and I know a lot of you were as well. If you have any thoughts on it, the Specs text line, let us know your comments from the game itself, but also if you were in the crowd. What did it feel like with the record crowd? Were they, was the crowd loud when it needed to be? It definitely translated pretty well on TV.
Yeah.
And watching the game.
That's what I thought. And anytime I can hear him from my place, that's a good thing.
Yeah. I think it was.
That doesn't always happen.
That's right, because you can literally hear it.
I can also hear it.
If they hit it just right.
So I knew something happened with the field goal.
I was going to say the blocked field goal,
I knew,
you could hear it.
And I'm okay with that. I don't like it when it's reverse.
Oh.
But, I mean, I can usually only hear them when it's a good, positive, loud.
Because
I don't hear the boos.
You get a tad bit of delay there.
A little bit of delay.
A little tad delay.
I was fine with it.
Yep. All right, we'll definitely talk about that game. Also, a lot to clean up from the weekend. Cowboys win, Texans lose. And yes, those NFL teams that had issues with kickers have already made moves by the time our show starts. We'll let you know the specifics on all of that. Plus, Rod Baber's coming up to give us his thoughts on Texas beating USC. Hope you're having a great Monday. Don't move. It's the Horn. Had to double check, make sure my wife wasn't producing the show today. Or maybe my dad. They both really like this song. Devin, any particular reason for the Def Leppard?
Big Def Leppard fan.
Big Def Leppard guy. All right. There you go. My wife just saw Def Leppard and Journey. Tour through Houston not long ago. All right. Shout out to Def Leppard. Also, a shout out to Trans-Siberian Orchestra. They are coming back to town. You can register now to win a pair of tickets to Trans-Siberian Orchestra, The Ghosts of Christmas Eve, presented by Hallmark Channel. The highly anticipated winter tour 2018 returns to Austin December 20th at the Frank Irwin Center. Tickets are on sale now at TexasBoxOffice.com or register for your chance to win right now on the contest page at HornFM.com. Trans-Siberian Orchestra. I know a lot of you like to make that a part of your holiday viewing. They are coming back to town.
Lots of texts coming in. This one, the game changed immensely when the safety call was missed. USC would have 16 points in the ball back. USC would have had the lead going into the half. That missed call changed the momentum of the game. It did. I think USC was so sloppy, and they've got so many things they have to deal with. I'm not sure that in the second half they were going to be able to keep it together.
Mm-hmm.
That punt, their special teams in general.
Oh, it was awful.
And yeah. Texas had some things to shore up, but was it big? Yes. Was it a missed call? Absolutely yes. Is it, with the way that second half went, something that USC can sit there and bitch about? I'd be careful on that one.
I'll be honest. This is maybe me wishing a rule. I always thought that the goal line was the same going in versus coming out. That if on the way in, I just need the
no,
edge.
No, you need it all the way out. That was the safety.
Yeah, I didn't realize the ball had to be all the way out. And if that's true and that's the rule, obviously it didn't happen. I thought they had plenty of evidence to look at it. And, I mean, it's just, it kind of sucks for football's sake,
right,
that they missed it.
And it was big, but Texas still had to punt from that area. And, right? Because
right,
they got the ball back and couldn't do anything. Still had to punt from their own end zone, pretty much, which would have been worse than the 20.
And
USC couldn't do anything with it. The adjustments were already made at that point.
And they crushed the punter. They went, then they hit the punter
I'm saying even after that, they didn't do anything and they still had to punt the ball.
Yeah, you're right. That's true. That is true. But at
the points and the momentum thing, you're right on.
And definitely was a missed call. If there's one
no
thing,
doubt.
If there's one thing I know over the years with Texas
fans.
We
missed it up in the booth.
They will. Yeah. I mean, Texas fans will be honest with you and tell you if there was a missed call. And I think they know that one. And that was another part of this game. It felt like that moment. And there may be in a couple others we could talk about. But the moments where a call was going to go one way or the other, it felt like it was going Texas's way.
Yep.
Saturday night.
Yep. And absolutely.
All of that, was kind of there. Make your own luck, but then also get a little bit of it. That was definitely one of those moments. 37-14 was the final. We'll get into more of it with Rod Babers here in a sec. Let's just get a quick Big Three for you on a Monday.
The Big Three.
segment brought to you by The Yellow Rose.
Book your bachelor party now. The best bachelor party destination in Central Texas. Special party packages and discount details at yellowrose.com.
You turned that into a real nice, you're about to say something and got caught on it and turned it into like a...
I was trying to tasting the air. Yes, it tastes like Monday. In the NFL, bad kickers mean you need new kickers. Vikings waived Daniel Carlson, and they signed Dan Bailey. The Browns released Zane Gonzalez, and they've signed Greg Joseph. Joseph is a rookie out of Florida Atlantic. Also, Carson Wentz is able to go this week. He'll start week 3 for Philadelphia. And the New England Patriots, in the last hour or so, have grabbed Josh Gordon. You probably saw over the weekend, Cleveland was set to release him, which they did today. They're tired of dealing with Josh's issues, and so they, you know, it's time for them to move on and maybe Josh to find a new situation. Looks like it's going to be with Bill Belichick and New England.
Alabama does it with coaches, recycle, maybe take a chance, but the talent's there.
Yeah.
And New England's done it and done it well with players, and hopefully that system will work for him. And if he's on the field and plays the way he can, and you give Brady a target like that, with a tight end like that and everything that they do schematically and they're chameleons, watch out. That could be really big.
I like it for him that he has a chance to actually
get
the most out of his potential too. I mean, he's been, you know, smothered by the Cleveland Browns franchise. Maybe he gets a chance to really figure out how good he can be, because he can be really good.
Agreed.
Yeah. Cowboys win, Texans lose over the weekend. Seattle and Chicago tonight in Monday Night Football. And if you're an Astros fan, you gained a game over the weekend. 4.5 is the lead now. Took 2 out of 3 from Arizona. Oakland loses 2 over the weekend. So you lead by 4.5 coming out, and Seattle is coming to you tonight. It is Framber Valdez going up against Wade LeBlanc as the Astros are up 4.5 in the division. That division title may be coming fairly quickly. We may be starting to talk magic numbers here in the next
couple weeks, right? I'm
seeing teams getting into the playoffs now, getting that done. So all that going on over the weekend. Let's bring in Rod Babers to talk about a lot of stuff that happened over the weekend.
Let's start with the text, guys, because I want to throw this around to all of us. It's something that we had all talked about, how with these two teams, both we're going to have to find hidden yardage. And from the Texas perspective, find hidden yardage, right? And usually, Rod, that's a punt return.
Special teams.
Kick return.
Yeah.
Little things flipping the field with a punt.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize that, guys, their punter or punters were going to just Joe Theismann hand this thing over. I mean, they flipped the field for us over and over.
Yeah. 3 punts under 30 yards, I think.
I hope Herman got them a game ball.
Yeah.
That is not what they mean when they tell punters to flip the field.
No, right.
Not what they're talking
for
about.
No, for us.
Yeah. Right. That's the anti-flip the field.
No, they had a bad special teams
game.
How big
was that, though?
Yeah, it was bad for them. The 3 punts under 30 yards. Of course, the blocked field goal. I think their kicker is now hurt, too.
He's out for the year. 3 guys went down.
Yeah.
That play, I retweeted it. That blocked field goal, if you go back and look at it, not as big, but the way everything went down as a USC fan, it was the football gods telling you, guys, it's not happening tonight, and it could be a rough year. It reminded me when I found out Cedric got a stinger on that pick 6.
Yeah.
Oh my God. What does BJ Johnson have herpes now, and he's out for the rest of the year? Like, what? You're on that one play?
You have
to be kidding me. 3 guys go down. Devontae Davis just went after
the
holder.
He had 2 blocks on there.
He got two blocks. He got help on another one, and a big ugly went tumbling.
Yeah.
And then Chase McGrath is looking at 4 Longhorns, including Gary Johnson, and thinking, okay, I got to make this look like I tried. But Gary blows on him, and the right knee just goes. He tries to make a cut, and the right knee's gone. He's out for the year.
And I think that means the kid from Vandegrift is now their kicker. He was listed as the backup.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
They have a
small world.
They have a kid that went to Vandegrift that's the backup. One of the fans texted me that last week, and I double-checked
cool.
it. Yeah, he was the backup. Now I guess he's the guy.
Those Central Texas kickers.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Kicker the kicker now, too.
Oh, we got ours.
Yeah.
Good luck to him, because we learned over the weekend that in big-time football, if you don't hit big kicks as kickers, you get to, you know, they're going to find somebody else. Longhorns obviously thought they had one.
We got him.
And 246-yarders, like that's just as solid as they could be, that's huge.
It's really big, and I said it's like getting a Brittany Griner. Said on Saturday, like, what if someone said, for the next 4 years, every meal is going to be taken care of? Like, it doesn't, you're not set for life, but it's a real comforting feeling to know you're going to have him for that long. And there may be some ups and downs in there, but usually a kicker is a kicker. I want to ask you about Chris Boyd. I thought he really played his ass off. Your thoughts as a corner?
He played really well. Amon-Ra St. Brown is just a that guy's going to play on Sundays. I mean, that's just the way it is. So there was even at times I saw Todd Orlando have man-to-man, and he would move Chris Boyd into the slot on Amon-Ra St. Brown. So he wanted to get him matched up on him as much as he could, but I didn't think he didn't want to over-leverage the defense by trying to adjust just to simply one player who wasn't, you know, it wasn't to the point where he was actually killing him where they had to make all the necessary adjustments. In the end, you know, Texas's defense ended up being, in terms of the pass defense, I think it ended up being good enough where Amon-Ra St. Brown still had a monster game. Was it 9 for 160 or something like that? But he never made the game-changing play against Texas that changed the momentum and everything. So he kept him on the wraps, in my opinion. He's just a hell of a player. Reminds me of Odell Beckham a little bit.
Good call there.
He's got a little Odell in him.
You don't see receivers that young. It's clear the modern-day connections there with those two guys.
Yeah.
But you don't see, at least I usually don't see receivers that young who have that good of a feel, and Klatt did a pretty good job of talking about it. He was letting coverage clear and finding a zone and sitting, and his buddy who he's been playing catch with for 10 years knows he's going to be there.
Yeah, that guy's an old soul. But usually you see that, right, with pedigree guys who are family members in the
older
league.
Older brothers
who play at a high level. He's that guy. But getting back to Chris Boyd, I think the secondary, I said this to Jeff Howe, and it's hard to – you know, I don't know. It's hard for me to really prove it. It's just me watching it, the eye test. I think the secondary is the strength of the defense now. It's crazy to say that because they're a young group, but when you look at the playmakers on the back end and the guys who have been making the plays and been most consistent, the D-line, we expect a lot from them, but this is the first game they actually have met expectations.
Yeah.
Well, the first two games, they underachieved. The linebacker court, they don't have enough bodies to be the leadership of this defense. I mean, they're just running out of bodies. They really are. Malcolm Roach now being the latest. He's going to be out 6 to 8 weeks, unfortunately. I think it'll hurt him as much against TCU as it will against K-State, not having a big bite like that to bang around, but we'll talk about that at another date. But I think the secondary right now, man, to me, is they really are showing that young group, that young crop of safeties, you might be talking about one of the better groups that's ever come through DBU, and that's a bold statement.
That is. That's a huge statement right there.
I mean, B.J. Foster, I mean, even the targeting penalty has Longhorn fans excited about him.
I know.
I'd be like, oh, man, I'm excited about it. I was like, yeah, I kicked out of the game. I was like, yeah, I know.
What about Kobe or Thompson? I mean, did you see anything?
I think you'll
guys
see them this week because the challenge will be now that Malcolm Roach is out, right? So you're going to play your nickel most of the time. When you do go to your dime and you have that joker, which B.J. Foster used to play, he's going to be out for the first half.
Right.
How do you adjust? Do you want to put P.J. Locke back in at safety and then put Josh Thompson in at the nickel? And do you want to try moving Brandon Jones to your joker a little bit? And, you know, so I don't want to see how he adjusts and how he moves things around. Maybe he'll just go nickel and won't even bother with the dime or the lightning package until the second half anyway.
Chad, we may get to Dallas and OU may be out of running backs, and we may be out of linebackers.
Yeah, but Kyler Murray.
Let's go 7-on-7.
Kyler Murray's still carrying the running game on his own. I think he's leading him in rushing yards right now, too, or something close to it.
He's
a hell of a player. Texas, Todd Orlando will truly be tested. I talked on my show, and we've talked about ad nauseum, that the Achilles heel seems to be for any great defense, or especially for a Todd Orlando defense, is the dual-threat quarterbacks. They're going to face the three best dual-threat quarterbacks in the Big 12 in the next 3 weeks, because Sean Robinson's leading all Big 12 quarterbacks in yards per rush, I think at 6.6. Lead is TCU in rushing touchdowns. After that, you got Alex Delton and Skylar Thompson, who are second and third on K-State in rushing. And after that, you got Kyler Murray, who's the best athlete at the quarterback position, arguably in the Big 12. And I think he's one of the leaders in rushing for Oklahoma State. Oh, sorry, for Oklahoma. That's going to be a test for Todd Orlando. If Texas is going to come out of this
Greer,
stretch,
who's later, who's not a dual threat, though.
No, I don't know what to do.
But he's going to be tough.
I trust Todd Orlando versus a Will Greer.
I'd almost rather
have that. And the JT Daniels
and the
traditional pocket passing quarterbacks. Those are the Sam Darnolds and the Baker Mayfields and the Mason Rudolphs. Those are the defenses, the offenses where Todd Orlando's been able to neutralize those types of quarterbacks. And those are high-level NFL quarterbacks. The guys who have given them fits are Kasim Hills and Tyrell Pigrams and Jesse Ertz and Skylar Thompson's and just Luke Skippers of the world.
Yeah.
These are the guys giving them problems. Well, now he's got those guys, you know, with an an explosive skill set in guys like Sean Robinson and Kyler Murray. So that worries me a little bit.
Admiral Washington, the Navy quarterback.
So you're telling me you think that TCU, Kansas State, and Oklahoma will each rush the ball more than 16 times in a football game?
Oh, ain't no doubt about it.
If you're a USC fan calling into a radio show this weekend, isn't that kind of where you focus? With what the Texas defense had given up the first two games, 16 combined?
It is, but it goes to show you guys, the offensive line. And I don't know, maybe 10 years ago I got to the point where I'm not going to buy that your offensive line is turned around, reinforced, rebuilt, ready to go until I see it.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I heard Giants fans telling me. I mean, we've been saying that.
Texans fans have said.
Right, exactly.
Right.
Oh, I think it's ready to go. All right, just let me see it.
Yeah.
Like, I'll buy you coming, you guys saying, hey, I saw this quarterback. I know you haven't seen him yet, like Tua. He's going to be nuts. I would go on the record and say, I think this guy could be really good before I'll ever say an offensive line's good until I see it.
So many different things have to be working in unison, right?
Yeah.
It's one of those things as a unit, it's got to be working.
Rod, real quick, you're a Texans fan. What happened to them yesterday? I was in and out on that game, and I saw it a little bit. Is there one way to explain it to me is why they lost?
They were just simply outcoached. Tennessee Titans didn't have their starting left tackle, starting right tackle, starting quarterback, or starting tight end. Mm. They had one touchdown, Tennessee did. This is how you know Mike Vrabel just outcoached Bill O'Brien, where they had Texans had uncovered gunners for a punt.
Oh,
and they had the guys covering the gunners coming from like inside the D line. It was weird.
And that went 70 yards,
66
it?
Technically, before a touchdown. And that was the first one that upset me. The second one that really upset me was that Sean Watson, he had 17 seconds left. Their ball's on the 48-yard line. They're headed in, and they have no timeouts left, and they got to get probably 15 yards to get in the field goal range. It's 20-17. They're down. And Deshaun Watson wastes 17 seconds on a second down, second and 10, and basically throws a 31-yard completion to DeAndre Hopkins, but the time runs out. They don't have any time to stop it.
He was past the line of scrimmage, too, I believe, wouldn't he?
I think he was like halfway there. They counted it as a completion, but either way, it didn't matter because you wasted too much damn time.
Right.
And then in the post game, he just says, well, I let my instincts take over, and you know, you can, in retrospect, you can say anything, but I was going with my gut. And it's like, well, you got a dumb gut. And the Texans.
Your gut is wrong.
Yeah, and the Texans are a team reflects leadership because Bill O'Brien last week said the same thing.
Exactly.
Wasn't my job to go to force them or compel them to review that catch by Gronkowski. He's like, yes, it is.
He's catching
your job.
Coach, didn't
so
he?
It's idiocracy happening with the Texans. Idiocracy, man. They're grossly imbecilic as a franchise.
That's bad. You can't be doing that. All right,
We got a lot more to talk to you about.
Yeah, no doubt.
We'll talk to Rod again at 4:30. Also, right now, let's have Rod tell you about my bookie because you might want to put a little something on a game, Rod.
Don't put it on the Texans. But your best bet is to go with my friends from MyBookie. They will hook you up. They are the best in the business. Been in business for years. Great reviews online, and their mobile site is so easy to use. I love them because they have in-game live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business as well. And you fantasy guys and gals out there, you can even bet the over-under, how many fantasy points a player will score. You can bet on almost anything at MyBookie. So remember, folks, who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. And MyBookie, that's who you need to be betting with. And right now, they're going to hook you up. You're going to make money before you even place a bet at MyBookie. Because if you go there right now, use the promo code RADIO, they're going to hook you up. They're going to match your deposit dollar for dollar. You won't get a better deal like that anywhere else. So go to MyBookie, use the promo code RADIO, and they'll match your deposit dollar for dollar. You go to MyBookie, you play, you win, and you get paid. That's how it works at MyBookie.
All right, coming up, we'll get you a crap bag and a reminder that there's just nothing like a prize fight. That's coming up on The Horn.
Chad's crap bag.
Crap bag. If you need an easy way to remember it, just think of a bag of crap.
All right, little crap bag for a Monday. Here is the simplest way I can say it when it comes to Canelo Triple G Part 2. I sat alone in my house and watched the fight. The pay-per-view cost me $85, and I was not disappointed at all. It is one of the most interesting fights I've ever watched in my life.
Really?
I know some people are upset about the decision. Did I think Triple G won? Yes, I did. But I had 7 rounds that I put a question mark by. They were so close. They were so tight. It was a master class. It was a PhD class in how do you judge a prize fight. When Harold Letterman has it 8-4 Triple G, but he says, I can totally understand how somebody would have it completely the other way. I've never quite seen a fight exactly like it, but I give both of those dudes tons of credit. Canelo walked in there, and it was almost like, all right, if you're going to call me a cheater, if you're going to say that I'm dirty, and then they sent the trainer over, and the trainer got real weird about the wraps. They said they didn't like Canelo's wrap, so they had to have somebody check that. He was pissed when that fight started, and Canelo stood there, and he said, I'm going to lean on my front foot, and we're going to hang out in this phone booth, and you're going to have to chop me down. Ultimately, I thought Triple G did it. The judges didn't think he did. But about midway through the fight, Triple G realizes I can either look old or I can keep my belts. And he decides he's going to dig in and he's going to throw. I thought it was a fascinating fight. I had it dead even after six rounds. And ultimately, I had Triple G winning every one of the rounds after that. So I had 9-3 Triple G. But I understand how people could have different combinations.
Okay. Because you got to understand, not seeing it and hearing some of the scores that people had, like you, or whether it's the guys on ESPN, Stephen A. Smith and Teddy Atlas. Yeah. And that can be fun television.
No,
I'm not a huge Stephen A. guy, but that loud can work.
Yeah, those two need to figure out a way to communicate without screaming, because it gets very silly very quickly.
Right. No, I do feel like I'm watching some political show or one of their morning shows.
Yeah, exactly.
I think Steven's good at that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I heard a lot of different ones, like 9-3, and I thought, okay, is this just boxing where, as Teddy would say, follow the money, or was it that tight of a fight? And the more I hear from people like you, it sounds like you could have 9-3. You could have 7-5.
Yeah. It was damn close. I still don't know why boxing does an even number of rounds. You shouldn't have a draw be that easy. But credit to Canelo. I didn't think he took the four belts, but they did. I'd watch a rematch in 2 seconds. I thought they were warriors, and it was another reminder to me, when it's good, there's just nothing like a prize fight. There is nothing in sports to me exactly like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, I say it all the time, but
not even UFC.
No.
Okay.
No. Because there's such a specificness to it, because you're not allowed to do some of the things that you're allowed to do in UFC. But it is just it was just two guys going after it. I hope they fight again. And again, I thought Triple G should have kept the belts. But it is the one fight I've seen that, yes, I could understand 9-3 either way, 8-4 either way. They were so close. You watch these rounds. I'm the kind of guy, when I watch, jabs or punches too, to me. But judges love Canelo, and they love crooked punches. And Triple G connected with a whole bunch of jabs, but Canelo connected with more power punches, more hooks, more uppercuts, more body shots, and it just looks more exciting to some judges. The crowd reacts more to Canelo sometimes. So it's the excitement of it. Sometimes there are fighters that judges just love, and judges love Canelo Alvarez.
Okay, but I'm glad to hear it was that tight.
It was. I would tell anybody that's got HBO, watch that replay.
I am.
Grab a piece of paper and score it for yourself. You tell me what you see, but I was thoroughly entertained. Those dudes are warriors. That
wasn't free, though, was it?
Oh, no, no.
Yeah, okay. That's what
I thought. It will be if you have HBO.
I do, right. Yeah. So I'm waiting for it to come on.
Right. Your replay, they'll throw it on this Saturday night, and you'll get to see the replay. But I thought it was great. Credit to both of them. Triple G and Canelo went after it. And I've said it, I think this is better for boxing that Canelo won. He's a more popular fighter worldwide. He's certainly got the Mexican fans behind him. And now I think they can create more interesting fights with him. But I do think Triple G probably deserves a third fight, because he fought his ass off Saturday night.
Well, a lot of people, including the two guys I talked about, Stephen A. Smith and Atlas, felt like he won it.
Right. I think he's won both fights. That's the thing.
You feel like he won it.
I think Triple G's won both fights. But, man, this one was so – it was so much different than last September, because last September Canelo stayed away from him. This time Canelo stood there.
Nice.
And he's got a chin. A couple times Triple G hit him with stuff that he thought, well, come on, that's got to knock him down. Canelo's tough. Now, again, as my judging, I'm not giving you – I'll give you credit for your chin, but I still have to give the guy credit for hitting you. And I don't know that the judges did that enough, but Canelo showed how tough he was, and it was fun. It was a fun fight to watch. I enjoyed it.